Here's a riddle. What do the two sounds you're about to hear have in common?
Came at dawn to a warm, misty place, barking dogs and the sound of running water. Thomas and Charlie, I said.
And... for starters, both are often described as...
transgressive.
That was Rebecca Bauman, one of the curators of the Everything is Permitted exhibition at the Lily, a display of all things Burroughs and beat. In 1981, these two artistic forces, beat writer William S. Burroughs and now defunct legendary local band The Dancing Cigarettes, came together to perform a gig at the Bluebird nightclub.
I remember it was packed house, and that was in the older Bluebird, so there was a lot less space.
Paul Sturm, Dancing Cigarettes fanatic.
Everyone showed up knowing that they were going to have a good time. The Dancing Cigarettes, they never disappointed me. They're always very energetic and a very creative band. I mean, it just was a great partnering. Whoever booked them, putting the Dancing Cigarettes as the closing band was genius.
The promo poster for the gig reads, Twilight Tones, Modern Music for Cool Fools, Literary Madness with William Burroughs, with John Giorno and the Dancing Cigarettes. This poster is one of countless objects currently at the Lilly Library for the Burroughs show, which also features the original scroll of Kerouac's On the Road. In that novel, Kerouac wrote of his impressions of Burroughs, who appears in the book as Old Bull Lee.
He says it would take all night to tell about Old Bull Lee.
That's Jim Canary, the head of conservation at the Lilly and the other curator of the show.
Let's just say now he was a teacher. And it may be said that he had every right to teach because he spent all his time learning. And the things he learned were what he considered to be and called the facts of life, which he learned not only out of necessity, but because he wanted to. And it talks about him dragging his thin body around the world and picking up bits of knowledge everywhere. Jack really kind of captured Burroughs with those words. They met when Jack was at Columbia in New York. They ended up collaborating on writing together. I think Jack gave the title Naked Lunch.
Jack Kerouac was just one of a succession of younger artists who saw Burroughs as a sort of crotchety grandfather artist figure and flocked around him for inspiration and collaboration. Besides Kerouac, there was also Lydia Lunch, Kurt Cobain, and of course, the Dancing Cigarettes.
There were six people in the band, and I would say that at least two-thirds of the members of the band were directly influenced by his work.
That was Tim Noe, who was the keyboardist, saxophonist, and occasional guitarist for the Dancing Cigarettes.
To me, he was like an iconic figure. I mean, I had read several of his books at that point, and the idea that I would actually meet him or even like play on the same stage was just kind of... it just seemed far-fetched. By and large, most of the band came from rural or very small-town kind of environment in Indiana. Very homogenous, very conservative. It's like a pretty repressive kind of environment. I don't want to, like, you know, diss Hoosiers altogether, but it's just not your typical kind of William Burroughs fan, you know? Yeah. So I think that he is a perfect example of somebody that we would listen to or turn to, read, whatever, because it was such an affront. It was transgressive. It was shocking. There's a spirit of transgression that it really was essential to that particular band and that at that particular time, that he was obviously a very potent representative of.
There's a letter on display at the Lily that shows exactly how the band felt about Burroughs. They sent it to him before he came to Bloomington. It says, "All of us feel it important that the information contained in your work reach a larger audience. Your writings have been an aggressive influence on our own material." They also gave him a copy of Magazine, which mimicked Burroughs' cut-up technique.
They sent him this great kind of zine called that all of them contributed to.
The name came from a ripped-up vintage magazine that the cover had been ripped and an ad underneath was showing through the torn page and it said That was all you could read. So they said, "We will make a magazine and we will call it
That longtime Bloomingtonian, who prefers to remain nameless, was, and still is, a raging Dancing Cigarettes fan and was present at the 1981 gig with Burroughs.
I had never seen a famous quote-unquote author before, so I didn't know what to expect, and I was surprised that he wasn't some sort of superhuman god. He was not very tall, not very big. He was very cadaverous. He looked very frail. He looked like a strong wind could blow him away. He was just kind of gray. His skin and hair and fingers were all gray. And he was wearing this awful cheap suit that probably came from like a Goodwill store. And his shoes were even awfuler. They were like 70s tan leather gum shoes that were really, really scuffed. The Dancing Cigarettes were, they were great. We loved the Dancing Cigarettes. They were our heroes.
That night, the first song that we played was this song that was in her repertoire at that point. It was called The Worms Inside. And I remember being nervous and excited about playing to such almost like royalty. To us, it was quite an honor and challenge. It's kind of like amazing to me that a person who was openly gay and wrote about his drug addiction was appearing in the middle of Indiana. I found that kind of astonishing. But at the same time, he was from the Midwest originally. He was from St. Louis, I believe. And so there's something that's kind of recognizable about him in one way, that he has a Midwestern flavor that he couldn't escape.
For WFIU Arts, I'm Colleen Leahy.